One, two, three, they're gonna run back to me. They always wanna come, but they never wanna leave. Exes and the they never wanna leave.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another show. If you know, you know, episode. So excited to be back every Wednesday with you all. If this is your first time, I'm your host, Belle, and each week I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. We are now, have been doing this for quite a long time and celebrated an amazing full last year of having artists and musicians and founders and devs and absolutely everything that you can think about. And I love to hear the perspective of shakers and movers in this space that have a tremendous story behind what we end up seeing. And so I'm really, really excited to welcome Kath Samar to the show today. I'm going to ask for everybody before we bring her up and start talking. I have pinned up on top the pinned post of today's show. If you can retweet that, like it, said, you know, retweet it out into the world, show some love for the algorithm so that we can have some more people in here. We do the show live on X every single Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you can also find it on all of your favorite streaming platform. So with all of that said, welcome, welcome to If You Know, You Know show. Got my co-host here in Tiro that I'm representing both of them. If you have ever any new artist or, you know, people on the show that you want to see come up here, let us know. We're always looking for new people. But for today, super excited. There is literally no one that I have talked to in the space that doesn't either know who Kath is or has seen some of the work and immediately says, holy shit, that's amazing. Who is that? So with that said, Kath, welcome, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me and thank you for the kind words. I'm really excited to be here today and to talk composite photography. I hope that your well as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm super excited to get into this conversation. I posted a link earlier today with a composite of like a lot of different photos that you've taken around the world. So I want to take it from step one, right? I want to take it from like who you are, not just as it relates to the photography, but how in the world you even started taking these amazing pictures. I'm going to tee you off by saying that I was, through my research, you know, was listening to different podcasts and different articles, and you actually left a career in fashion design and moved to Australia with a one-way ticket. Start from there. What is the story behind that? That's incredible.
Yeah. So I actually have a background also in sciences. That's not something that I talk about a lot, but I studied biomedical sciences at university. And at that time, I was doing some modeling, and my goal was to become a doctor. And when I finally got the grades to become a doctor, like to apply to medicine, I just kind of like paused and I was like, what do I really want to do? Like, is this really going to make me happy? And at that time, fashion was bringing me more excitement and happiness. So I decided to drop biomedical sciences, and then I moved to Montreal, and then I studied fashion design there for a couple of years. So I was doing modeling and fashion styling for a couple of years as well. And it was actually a pretty tough industry. Lots of competition in Montreal. I was able to build a pretty solid fashion styling portfolio pretty early on in my career, but just didn't really have any job there. And also, I didn't feel completely fulfilled by that type of job. And I feel like I wanted to maybe like get outside of my comfort zone and do something completely different, and even like maybe a little less based on, if I can say, like superficial values. So I was really looking for like real experiences. So that's why I decided to basically sell like a big sale of all of my designer clothing. That was like a total fail. but I also broke the lease of my apartment, and I booked a one-way ticket to Australia, which at that time I was actually, I had met someone and he also wanted to go there. So we went to Australia together. And yeah, I ended up working at a cherry farm in Tasmania for a couple of months, and then worked at a banana farm for a year and a half. And I would go back to Quebec like a couple months at a time, like in between to see my family. But I would always go back to Australia to work. And yeah, that was kind of like the beginning of a really amazing journey. And when I was over there, I would go like on the weekends to explore the area a little bit. And there were a lot of like really beautiful nature in Australia. So I would bring my iPhone and take some photos and post them on my Instagram at that time. And there's a bandana company that reached out to me. And they were like, hey, like, we love your photography. Would you like to take photos of our products? And I was like, oh, sure. I have no I didn't tell them, but I had no experience in photography at all. I just played a little bit, like, with a camera, but, like, nothing crazy. But I said yes, and that's really how I started taking photos, by photographing people wearing the bandana, doing all kinds of activities, like running, hiking, kayaking, etc. So that's how I started in the photography world, and then basically went from being in front of the camera to behind the camera. And I have to say that I have found more fulfillment actually being behind the camera.
That is, there's like so much to unpack there and so many questions that I want to follow up on that. The story that you tell, first of all, congratulations. And, you know, I'm going to be fangirling here through this interview and through this chat, because I just think that there is a tremendous, it's undervalued when we see a person, much less a woman, take chances and do things that are different and do things that are risky and potentially, you know, dangerous and different, et cetera. And I just don't think that it's applauded enough. And through literally even seeing your work and the shots that you've been able to take, you put yourself out there every single time, you know. And I think that it starts from even before that, of making those changes, of just saying, you know what, I'm going to try something different and I'm going to sell everything and I'm just going to go over there. And I think that those sacrifices that we make through life end up rewarding us in ways that, that, you know, multiply throughout the year. So I just want to get that out there that, that I am a little bit fangirling, and normally I don't, but I'm going to today. So excuse me while I, stumble on these questions, but like I said, there's a lot to unpack there. And you talked about, I think it's really, really cool that you talked about how you started posting things on Instagram, because I think that that is, the picture of the opportunity that the creator economy and particularly NFT technology and Web3 opens up the rooms and the doors for a lot of people in the space, right? You think about like the YouTube era for musicians, or you think about the Instagram era for photographers or for artists, et cetera. And there have been a lot of doors opened because it provided that discoverability. And so later on in the conversation, I really want to tap into that side of it, of what that discoverability meant for you and how you see it as it relates to like going forward. Because now, you know, perhaps once upon a time, posting photos on Instagram, and you know, once upon a time, there wasn't that much competition, but today there's a lot more competition than there was when it first came out. And so I'm really curious, I don't know if you want to touch on it now or later in the conversation, but I'm super curious on what your thoughts are on how a new artist is able to break through that discoverability and actually be seen on any kind of streaming platform, whether it be Instagram or YouTube or Twitter, X now for content creator. So that's a lot to unpack there. Like I said, I'm going to throw that out there and just kind of get your mind thinking about that. And so I want to go back to like before you even started, right? You you did the Australia, you started working with this product, taking shots on iPhone 3. And so after that, where does it take you to what we see now, right? Of you out in the mountains and the most obscure, hard to reach places. How does that happen? How'd you get from there to there?
Yeah, so I feel like when I was in Australia, I did take a few like trips also outside of Australia. So for example, I went to New Zealand. I did a bit of hiking there, and I kind of like realized, I'm like, oh, I actually enjoyed hiking, but I can't say that there was a big breakthrough at that moment. For me, the big breakthrough and really knowing that this was meant for me was when I finished my farm work, and then I took a 3-month trip to Indonesia, Hawaii, and then I ended up in the Canadian Rockies. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Canadian Rockies, but the mountains over there are absolutely insane. And for me, it was my first time seeing gigantic mountains like that. So I had never really had the opportunity to even know that this was something that quote unquote was like turning me on. So when I saw those mountains, I just remember the feeling. Like it was really a strange feeling, like maybe like a feeling of home, or I just felt like there was something that was really, really attractive to me to spend time in the mountains. So when I arrived in the Canadian Rockies, again, I was shooting for maybe a couple of months. I was still shooting on automatic. I had no idea what I was doing. I rented a car, and then I just slept in that car for 3 weeks, and I just hiked, and I met with some photographers I have been following for a couple of years. I met with some strangers, and actually like a big trip that had like a really important impact is when I met with a couple of strangers that I met on the internet, and then we decided to do a scramble. And a scramble is basically when you just like scout a mountain and there's no trail, so you just like go straight in the bush and then make your way up the peak. And that was my first time doing that. And first time also for many people in the group. I think we only had one person that had experience, actually. So that day turned out to be absolutely insane. Like, we hiked through the bushes and then reached an amazing ridge. And then we, instead of going back down, we just kept going along the ridge. And we kept walking on the ridge towards this massive glacier, transforming into a glacier lake and then a waterfall. And we just kept making our way towards there. And there's like a really amazing viewpoint that opened up. And I took a shot and I was like, okay, this is what I want to do, is like exploring wild, untouched places and combining the hiking, the adventure with photography. I think that the combination of it is really important for me. Like, if I'm being completely transparent, for me, just like shooting something from the side of the road, I don't feel as much fulfillment. I can enjoy it, but I really enjoy the adventure and exploration part. And I think that's like really essential in my process. So after this moment, I actually called my mom and I was like, Mom, I want to stay here. Like, I feel like, I don't know what is happening, but I feel like I belong here. And I actually ended up going back to the Canadian Rockies every single year. And now I have moved permanently there. I live in Calgary. I was living in Canmore, which is straight in the Canadian Rockies. So, like, I feel like this feeling of belonging somewhere, like, or a feeling of like being home, that's really, really when I went to the Canadian Rockies the first time, and I just got stuck to this place. And I think the Canadian Rockies, they have really played an important part in my journey and in my portfolio.
Had you hiked ever before that experience?
Honestly, just a little bit, like a few trails, like maybe a couple in New Zealand, maybe one in Tasmania, like, but really not that much, really not that much. And also they were not like massive mountains like the Rockies. So I knew that this was something I was like enjoying, but I never knew that it was a true passion before going to the Canadian Rockies.
That is so cool. I think that it's even cooler, the fact that you hadn't done that before, because I would imagine, walk us through how that feels. Like, truly, I would imagine, like, I envision me when I've gone hiking before, and, you know, I'm not a hiker, but when I go visit my sister in Minnesota and we go hiking or things like that, I am like, don't talk to me. Every single bone in my body hurts right now and I can't even focus. And yet, you know, it's like, don't even ask me for anything right now. And yet you did that and you like got inspiration from us. Tell us how that, you know, is that right? Is that how it feels?
Yeah. It's like, you know how there's people that really dislike working out, there's people that really enjoy working out. I think it's all a matter of like the chemicals that are released in, you know, into your body when you're doing something. But for me, it was just like, wow, I'm really enjoying this. Even if I'm like out of breath and everything hurts, I actually love it. And I think that also the feeling of like being able to do whatever, it's like, it's I would have never thought that I could just be like, oh, here's the summit. I'm just going to make my way up there and not die, you know, along the way. And it really makes you feel powerful in a sense. And also, I love the feeling of disconnection when I go in the mountains. You know, you don't have internet. For me, it's almost like a meditation. It's a forced meditation. And yeah, I would say that that's probably another part of why I enjoy it so much, and like massive releases of dopamine when I do that, for sure.
So would you say that when you're capturing those images and you're capturing that landscape, is it that you're also capturing the strength that it took you, the pain that it took you, the pain and the tears and, you know, perseverance to be able to take that.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a huge part. I think that's a huge part of it. And I think it's how I started doing photography. So when I started, I was definitely doing more landscape photography. I would experiment a little bit with compositing. But now having like adding the challenge of compositing, that's also something that like I appreciate a lot. It's like, it's almost like problem solving. So when I go somewhere and I see, you know, I see a landscape, usually it's pretty rare that I will capture it the first time. I will go there a first time and then come back home, think about what I saw. Sometimes even the first time, I don't even bring my camera. And I just like process everything and then come up with ideas. And then I come back with a plan. It's like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna hike like halfway up and then capture the Milky Way. And then once I'm at the top, I'm gonna capture Blue Hour. And then when I go back home, you know, I will put everything together. So that's what I love. I love to capture the landscape in a way that it represents like an experience more than reality. And that's actually something that I have discovered pretty early on in my journey, in my process. I think just a few months into doing landscape photography, I was already compositing and posting on social media without even knowing that this was called like a composite. Like for me, it was just normal to capture elements separately and then put everything together. And very quickly, I realized that this is not a common practice at all. And even like back in the days in 2016, like it was looked down like quite a bit. It was like considered cheating. But for me, it's always been a way to just like express myself in a way that it's more authentic, in a way that I can incorporate elements of my imagination into nature, and in a way that the final piece is a representation of both me and nature. Like I don't do what I do to just, you know, capture the beauty of nature in its most natural state. Like there's a little bit of a, maybe it's a selfish component, but for me, it's essential to be able to connect with my work to add this challenge of compositing.
So I think you already explained just a little bit about what it is, but just to be clear, can you explain what is composite photography?
So composite photography, my own personal definitions, because there's no like real definition out there, but for me, it's really about capturing different elements when you're in the field. And then when you come back home and you start editing, is putting those elements together. So there's different ways to composite. You can actually composite in a way that it could be a representation of reality, and it's just to like overcome camera limitations. So for example, you could set up your camera and then at a specific moment in time, you could capture the foreground and then an hour later, the background, and then put everything together. So maybe like the background has like more interesting colors at that time. Or you can literally just like photograph elements from different valleys or even different countries and then put everything together. So it really goes from like one extreme to another, whether you want to represent reality or if you want to create something that is like completely impossible and that's basically like a creation. But it's really the act, I would say, of capturing different elements and then assembling them afterwards while editing.
So the editing process obviously takes you a long time, but where does the creative process start for you? Like, how do you even go about researching it? And do you end up having to go multiple times to get different shots for that composite?
Yeah, there's a few times where, okay, so basically like where the idea starts, it's very difficult to know, but it's something that sparks my curiosity. So it's either a documentary I saw about a certain area in the world. Sometimes also I'll spend time looking on Google Earth and it's like, you know, this lake with this mountain looks pretty cool. So there's always something that just sparks my curiosity. So that's where the process begins. And then I will move forward towards the research. So okay, well, has this area been explored before? Maybe there are some trip reports, maybe some blogs written about it. And then I will make some research on social media, Google. So like the research part, usually for me, is important because I can get at least a small idea of what I'm going to capture. So I can already start building in my mind what I want as like the final product. So there's been moment where just from the research, without even visiting the location, I already knew what I wanted to create, like at the end. So I would say the research is a huge thing. And then usually what I like to do is go back to the location that I have selected multiple times. It's very difficult for me to go somewhere a first time and just like rush into capturing something. Usually I like to go first time, like no camera, and just look around and enjoy the place. And it doesn't even need to be sunrise, sunset, blue hour. It can be during daytime, just so I have an idea. So I'll just like get my phone, capture a few different angles, and then come back and then start thinking about that. So the thinking is important because it's, to me, it's like the simmering of the ideas, and I need time to come up with ideas. Like, I'm definitely not a photographer who's good in like capturing stuff in the moment. That's not my strength. I think my strength is coming up with well-developed ideas and then going in the field to execute those ideas. So once I go in the field, capture everything I need, I come back home. And usually I like to leave those images in the hard drive and then simmer for at least a couple of months. Because for me, it allows me to disconnect with the experience. And, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure many photographers relate to this, is like, you'll go somewhere, you'll capture something, and because the experience is so fresh, you don't realize how epic this was. It's almost like it desensitizes you to like the beauty of what you just experienced. So for me to like leave the images in the hard drive for a little bit and let that simmer and then come back to it is a way to reconnect with those images, with the experience, and even appreciate the beauty even more. And then that sparks new inspiration. So from there, I will start assembling everything together, and my process can take from 10 hours to 150 plus hours. It really depends on the complexity of the composite and how many elements I have captured.
That takes a lot of patience, Kath. Have you always had that? Like, how did you stumble upon recognizing that patience would lead to further inspiration to come back?
I think I have noticed it pretty quickly by capturing stuff and then, you know, rushing to put something out. Usually I would never be really happy with it. And then a couple months later, I would look at my image and be like, oh, I wish I had done this way or edited this way. So I think that's why slowing down and really taking the time to think through the edit and also the emotions I want to convey, it's really helped me create something that I like better. And I think also maybe there's a role in me not wanting to necessarily like capture a landscape in its most natural state, because if that's your intent, then you come back home, maybe you do like a very natural edit and then it's ready to go. But for me, it's really about incorporating like myself in the landscape and changing it sometimes to a place where it's like, it almost feels like unnatural, or even sometimes it does. I think patience is huge for me. Maybe that's a quality that I have. I don't know, but I just know that it's a love and hate relationship with the editing for sure. It's like the longest it takes, the more proud I have of myself, but it's definitely challenging, you know, to sit in front of an image for 50 plus hours.
I was about to ask you, what is the longest that it has taken from the moment that you started it to the moment that you published it?
For the editing, I would say my latest piece on AOTM, Jardin Secret, the one with the red tree, just because it had a lot of different elements. It's 21 images. The tree was extremely technical. I had to go like in between each leaf and manually erase pixel by pixel each leaf of the tree to reveal the new background in the background. So that was like really, really tough. But again, like at the end, it's one of the artworks that I'm the most proud of. And physically, I can't say it was like very like a, it was not like a so much of a physical challenge, like capturing those elements. For this one, the challenge was definitely more the editing part.
And what has been, you know, your favorite location to take photos in?
That's so tough to answer. You can't ask this question. Favorite place? Oh, it's like I've been to Patagonia so many times. I think I've been 4 or 5 times, maybe 4 times. So, you know, I think if we take this as a stat, I would say probably Patagonia is like one of the most photogenic places. Also for hiking is really nice. I really enjoyed Peru as well. I did one trek in Peru back in 2019 where I was able to capture 7 portfolio images over 8 days. And that is like, I've never been able to do that ever again. Usually a trek of 7 days, I'll come back with 1 images, maybe 2, but like 7 images. I was just so inspired, had insane conditions, I was really well prepared as well. I already had kind of like a plan of what I wanted to capture, but yeah, I have to say Peru was really insane in terms of photography opportunities. Like the night sky over there also is so beautiful. So yeah, so I would say maybe Patagonia and Peru. And I also took a trip to Tasmania back in February. That was really cool. So yeah, maybe that those are top 3.
You have a story about a bear interaction. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I do. So that was a couple years ago. I wanted to go back to a spot that I have actually hiked multiple times. I never got the conditions that I wanted. It was either way too rainy, snowy, whatever. It was just not right. And I really wanted to go back there. And then the day before I went, I actually saw some friends at a coffee shop and they had just did the hike and they said that they had to turn back because there was a grizzly on the trail. And for me, I was like, oh, you know, doesn't mean that the grizzly is going to be there when I'm going to go. So maybe I'll just take a chance, you know. So I decided to go. I drove there, slept in my car, woke up at 2 a.m., started the trek in the darkness, and then I was making a lot of noise, knowing that there was a bear in the area. I had bear spray, I had everything I needed, like Garmin, and was making a lot of noise, honestly. And there's a point of the trail, it's like it becomes a plateau with like beautiful streams, flowers. It's like a perfect environment for a bear. And I reached a spot and like I can catch my breath because it's flat. And then I look up and my headlamp shines on like 2 eyes. And then I see like a silhouette in front of me, massive silhouette. And then it's just kind of like moving a little bit and some steam coming out of the nose. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the bear. So I don't know how far it is, maybe 10, 15, 20 meters in front. It feels pretty close. And it's not really doing anything. It's just on the trail, just kind of like going from left to right. And I just like started making noise, get my bear spray out and then start walking backwards. And then up until I would lose sight of the bear. And then at this point, I'm like, okay, well, this is like my 5th time doing this trek. I'm kind of pissed off because I really want to get the shot. It's perfect conditions also, like perfect sky, like first time I'm doing it, it's perfect conditions. But there's a bear on the trail. Like, what do I do? So I decided to wait, I don't know, 15, 30 minutes, just like chilling and waiting to see if he would come down or like just, I don't know, just waiting it out. And then I decided to continue and go back up on the trail and then make even more noise. And the bear was gone. I was able to reach the ridge and the viewpoint to photograph, and all the shots turned out to be like actually terrible because I didn't realize, but I had such high adrenaline from the encounter that I was so shaky. I was setting up my camera wrong. Like, anyways, I didn't really get any shots from that moment. And yeah, took the shots. And on the way back down, I made a lot of noise. Didn't see the bear. Encountered like a man who was going up, and he was like hearing me scream, and he's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, there's a bear. Like, they just are making some noise." So anyways, that was pretty scary, you know, solo in the night with a bear encounter. That's not something I recommend, but nothing happened. And yeah, maybe I was a little bit, I don't know, careless here, and I didn't get the shots, but I guess it's a cool story to tell for sure.
That's so crazy. So crazy and so unexpected. Would you do it again, though?
I don't know if I would do it again. Like, it kind of, not traumatized me, but like, after that, I was like, okay, this was like a little careless, maybe. You know, if there's a bear in the area, don't go the next day alone hiking at night. Like, that's kind of crazy. So I think, yeah, at my age now, I would probably not do it.
Good. That's very good news. I think that, you know, we all have those adventurous days, but good God, that's incredibly adventurous. And so I'm glad that you got that out of your system and you don't have to do that again. Cause yeah, that's pretty wild, but it makes for an excellent story. I want to start opening up the lines. If anybody wants to get up here and ask Kath some questions, I'm totally open to that. Kath, are you okay with that?
Yeah, no problem.
Awesome. While we do that, I wanted to ask you about recently you dropped on a collection on Solana. And, you know, I think that you made waves as one of the top artists, photographers in the space to do so, like fine art going into Solana, which is amazing. So I wanted to see, how was that experience? What made you do that? And are you looking at any of the other blockchains, specifically Ordinals, to be able to do the same?
Yeah, so actually my first drop on Solana was back in June 2022. I dropped a one-on-one on Exchange Art. The platform, I think, had been there for maybe like a year. I knew the founders. And a couple months before, I was just like seeing all of those spaces about Solana and the Solana community, and I would just start jumping on spaces and understanding. And it's a very passionate, intense community. And I think the chain also at the time had a reputation to be home to like mostly bad art, bad PFP project, rugs. So it was almost like intriguing. And I liked the almost like the challenge of dropping something a bit more like, you know, fine art, you know, amongst all of the rugs, just to do something different, honestly. And yeah, it ended up, I ended up selling that one-on-one, and also collected a few pieces from different artists on Solana. And I just kind of like always really loved the chain. And then, you know, during the FTX collapse, like there was a huge hit on the chain. So I think it became a little bit quiet. So that was what, like a year and a couple months ago. I think that was like back in November 2022, I believe. So I think, yeah, I think a lot of, like Solana got a pretty bad hit. There's also a platform that closed, I believe. Anyways, so the ecosystem was like really shaken up. And then slowly it started like being pretty healthy again. And actually, like after I minted and sold that one of one, like it was, it's always been in the plans to drop an edition. So I had this specific image day one, which is a canoe shot I took back in 2017. It is early work, and I liked the idea to drop my early work on Solana just to like make a separation. But it's still one of my most popular, like in terms of, you know, social media shares, like people asking me prints about this image. Like I really noticed that despite being not a composite, despite being early work, it is still one of my most appreciated. So it was important for me to drop something on the chain that was still high quality, but somewhat had a separation with the rest of my work on Ethereum. And day one, the title. So I have been wanting to drop this on January 1st. So it just like the timing was actually great in that sense. And maybe lastly, I really wanted to offer a more like finer physical portion of it, which is why I allowed people who are holders of Day One to order a print from me. And usually, if I'm being completely honest, I don't really take orders, print orders like below a certain amount. So like offering prints at maybe like lower cost and print in like a big batch, that was like a cool way, I believe, for the holders to also have the physical component that they can put at home. And it's also signed and dated and comes with a certificate of authenticity where there's like a link to the contract. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Just really wanted to do something more fine art on Solana and challenge those ideas that there's no good art on Solana. And like, it's totally not true. There's amazing art and amazing artists on Solana.
I really like that. And I admire how you went with the community aspect of it also, because you're right. The Solana community is incredibly strong, and the people that believe in it to, you know, to the umpteenth level. I mean, they are diehards for Solana, and it's really lovely to see it get that different type of light. Are you looking at anything else like the Bitcoin ordinal side?
I have been learning about ordinals for the last few months, actually in the talks with a bunch of people. So I am definitely looking at the chain. For me, if I enter that space, I would love for it to be in a way that it's like the most respectful as possible, and also actually utilizing the tech of the chain. I think I'm learning that you can do some really crazy stuff. So I'm really interested in utilizing some of that tech with recursions, and then you can do like evolving NFTs. And like, yes, you can do some of that stuff on Ethereum as well. But I think that just like Solana, the Bitcoin community and Ordinals community is so strong, and it's just like a different kind of culture. So yeah, just I'm honestly taking my time, just like I took my time with Solana. I think it's important. And maybe you guys are going to see something in 2024.
I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. So looking forward to that. We have two people who have requested, and super excited for both of their questions. Carity, how are you? You're up first.
Hey, Bell. Always a pleasure. I have to admit, I did join the space a little late. I had some other things going on. So I apologize if my question was already discussed, but if not, Kath, I would love to know, because I follow your work. I see it. I like it. I love it and all that. And I noticed that you do definitely have your own niche and style and things you like to shoot or project on, you know, different platforms and whatnot. But I know a lot of photographers also love to take photos and things of other stuff that they might not be showing. So I'm curious to know, are there any other lanes of photography that you find yourself dabbling in? And if so, what are those? And if there are other lanes you dabble in, is there any chance that you will ever bring those to NFTs or start dropping those for people to see and collect?
Hey, Carrie, thank you for your question. That's a really good question. So I have dabbled in other stuff. I've actually done a little bit of portraits, a little bit of like allotments. I have tried wildlife, but it just doesn't speak to me as much as landscape. So I have dabbled into other stuff, but my true passion and obsession is really landscape. Well, particularly composite landscape photography. I feel like even if I like try to experiment with other stuff, I just always come back to composite landscape photography. So it's almost like to a point where it's like really obsessive, and I feel like I have still so much to learn and to improve. So for me, like until I haven't really maybe fully reached that plateau, which some artists sometimes talk about, it's like sometimes you reach like a really good level and it's difficult to get even better. I feel like for me, I'm like 40% like of what I can offer. So I'm still learning new techniques and really looking to perfection what I'm doing already. So unfortunately, every time I try other stuff, I just feel myself drifting back into landscape photography. So I think I will keep doing that for a little bit. You can always go on my website to see some other stuff, but I just feel like what I do now is also a better representation of myself. And that's what I have noticed, is that composite photography for me is really a way to express like my most true self compared to, let's say, like wildlife. I feel like it wouldn't be me 100%. It wouldn't be me trying something new. But just to finish, I still believe that there's a lot to learn from trying different styles. And I think that you can even learn like new techniques that might be amazing to apply on the medium that you're working on, like mainly. So yeah, I would say right now, nothing new to collect, like outside of landscape photography, but maybe in the future, that's for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that answer. That definitely answers it. And, you know, I wish my pockets were deep enough to collect on your level, but unfortunately they're not. But it's always exciting and fun to see, you know, what people put out on that level. And, you know, so yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for that answer. And Belle, thank you for bringing me up. I always love your spaces, as you know. So I will now hop down and keep on listening.
Thanks, Adam. Adam is one of my favorite people, always shows up every single time. And I love that. Thank you to everybody who always does show up. So it truly means the world to me. Thank you. Thank you. Studio Pyman, how are you? Welcome. Welcome to the show. So excited to have your question. And it was amazing seeing you in Miami.
Yes. Hi, GM, everybody. Yeah, it was wonderful meeting you in person. Definitely one of the highlights of Basel for me. Well, I appreciate your spaces and the way you support the artists and the creators here on the space. And I love Kat. I just had to come up and say hi. And, you know, she's an OG photographer that I had the pleasure of meeting back in early 2021 Clubhouse days. And so, yeah, I just love hearing your story, Kat, and I'm glad that our paths have crossed. And, you know, I heard, I've been in the Ordinals from, you know, last year when, you know, like February of last year, and gotten to know a lot of the Ordinals builders, and it's such an awesome, supportive community, and it's so open and inclusive. Excited that when I heard that you're dabbling, you're in Ordinals soon. I guess one question that came to my mind, I mean, I have tons of questions, but one is, you know, what are your thoughts and, you know, or and usage of AI, and do you use AI yourself? And if so, in what capacities? I guess that's something that just popped in my head.
Hello. So good to have you on stage again. I feel like this has been like 3 years now, ever since, like, sometimes you jump on stage, and I always appreciate hearing you talk, and always appreciate your support. You're an OG as well. So about AI, I actually launched a project back early 2022 called The Metascapes, where we worked with a team that actually built their own AI. So it's not an AI that is accessible to anyone. And we basically train the AI on my work, on Yuri Belesky's work, and Ryan Newburn's work, and mixed everything together. And then we created those AI landscapes that were kind of like a blend between all of our styles. So that was really fun to do. It was my first time really dabbling into this. I mean, if you look at what we created and now what like Midjourney like has the capacity to create, it's kind of like interesting. Like the Metascapes, they almost look like paintings compared to what Midjourney can create. But for me, just like photography, I'm pro freedom, but I'm also pro transparency. And that's one thing I have learned, like with my work, is actually like at the beginning when I was sharing it online, I had no idea that people were not compositing, or that it was perceived a certain way, or that it could offend people, that I would add a moon or change the shape of a mountain. And it really made me realize that transparency is so important. I mean, maybe you can choose to not be transparent as like a, I don't know, maybe like performance art. But I really believe that transparency and education is important. So I would say, like, for me, when I see people using AI, I can very much appreciate an AI artwork. I think, you know, if it triggers a certain emotion within myself, it doesn't matter if it's AI painting, photography. Like, that's actually having an impact on me. What matters is that the person is actually transparent about this, you know, and doesn't attempt to deceive. So I think that's the difference. So that would be like my take on AI. I think, you know, AI is so new. So like, I think people are still experimenting, like how to share this in a way that it's like ethical, and it's very new, right? It's like, so I don't think there's like necessarily right or wrong. It's more like, you know, how you feel about it when you share. And I know that if I would share an AI artwork, I would feel 1,000 times better being transparent about it and being very open, you know, because when you attempt maybe like to hide it, just like compositing, it showcases that you're not confident in your art. So, you know, like if you have an AI project, like be open about it, like tell people how you created it, like explain the prompts or like explain anything that went behind it. So that would be my take on AI.
I appreciate that thorough answer, and I'm 100% with you about transparency. And including it in your story, I think, again, that's a huge part of the artwork. And I really appreciate that. And it's so good to hear your voice. And, you know, I love one of the other things I wanted to say, Kat. I loved hearing your story about Solana and how you were there through the ups and downs of the bear and the bull. And I really love that about you, that you're an explorer in so many ways. So I just wanted to also shout you out for experimenting with different chains. Have you done anything on Avalanche or any of the other layer twos like Base?
I have not, but again, you know, for me, maybe after a little bit of research, maybe I will be interested in experimenting there. I just don't believe in being confined to a single chain. I think that there's many different communities, many different cultures, and all of them are worth exploring. And I don't think that, you know, specific chains should be confined to specific type of art or stuff like that. But I'm very open. Have you experimented on those chains?
Yeah, actually, I have on one, and I've curated and actually minted some an open edition, my first actual open edition on Base during Basel for the Base House. And I really liked working with their team. They're really supportive of the artists, and that was a great experience. And most recently, I'm working with Avalanche and doing some stuff for the I think it's called the Creator's House in Paris for NFT Paris. So yeah, their team, I met like again a year ago, and they're really supportive of artists, and they like to onboard, you know, as many artists as they can support. And yeah, I love to make an introduction. If you like, I'll shoot you a DM and we can talk about it.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you so much.
Sure, of course. My pleasure. Good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear you too.
And just like that, that's exactly how those connections are met. I love that. NFT girl, you got a question?
Yes, Kat, we love you. Thank you so much for being on and for sharing your story. I found it so courageous just to be able to take those leaps of faith. And I think you nailed it with saying, you know, sometimes we value the wrong things or we're chasing the thing that's not fulfilling. And so I think it takes a lot of courage to actually be aware and recognize that and then look for an alternative. I had a question for you because I always find this interesting. How did you actually get into NFTs? Like, who introduced you to the technology?
That has to be, I believe, Dave Krigman. Pretty sure Dave was like one of the first ones. He told me to get on Clubhouse. Also Jan Silva. I would say both of them would be the top two. Early 2021 Clubhouse. And it's so funny because I remember when I was on Clubhouse, and that's how you learn, right? It's just like, listen to people talk about the technology, and I would just be on there for 10 to 12 hours a day from the moment I wake up to the moment that I go to bed, just like completely obsessed. And I'm sure many people can identify to that as well. But it was just like, it just felt like this really strange, intriguing, amazing movement. And I'm very curious by nature, and I just like to explore things that are, you know, new and don't have like so much maybe information about it, and then just like dig by myself. So that was my way to learn about this. Also had a few conversations with Justin Aversano. So yeah, just like really just by listening, I think by listening and also forcing myself to jump on stage and tell my story when I was extremely uncomfortable, extremely shy. My God, I had like a script of things that I would need to say. That was how bad I was. So I think that maybe as a side note, this space personally has really helped me grow in a sense that I learned to, I basically learned how to tell my story and how to express myself and, you know, share my art in a way that it's deeper than just posting an image on Instagram with some captions and hashtags. So I think that NFTs can have a huge impact on an artist's career in a way that it's different than just posting on social media. Like, there's people that are, they want to know your work, your story. Like, they want to know more about yourself. So it really like almost forces you to put yourself out there and learn to communicate things about you and your art. So just like a fun side note about Clubhouse and NFTs.
I love that so much because you hit on something.
I definitely recall those great memories, those nights that sometimes we didn't even sleep through the night, actually. You went and some people fell asleep with their phones.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Their mics were on. You could hear them snore. It was just really crazy. You know, pioneering times, like you said, it's about exploration. And, you know, one thing I love about tech, I've been around technology and arts for probably over three decades now. So before Web 1, and one thing that always intrigued me was the ever-evolving evolvement of technology, excuse me. And so, yeah, and if you have curiosity, which we all do, it's awesome to be able to explore that and continue like a lifelong learning, you know? And yeah, definitely recall those great night. Sometimes I actually wish that and want to actually just open a room in Clubhouse just for the sake of, you know, keeping that those memories alive. So yeah, great memories.
That's awesome. That's how the community starts, right? And I think that that's how it continues. Our Jedi talks about that too, of like always wanting to go back and open up a room and just sleep through it. It's very nostalgic. Kath, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to share with us?
No, I think we've touched on many points. You know, maybe like in terms of like the current market and maybe people are struggling, I think that maybe something that I can share, something I have personally thought about and realized lately, is not all art that you create needs to be an NFT or even sold. I think it's important to, as artists, to be able to create work without the thought of potentially turning this into an NFT or an NFT project. And I think that's how we are going to keep our, you know, our art alive and inspiration alive. So I know that there's a lot of people who are always focused on, okay, next sale. But I feel like, maybe just like release something for yourself, maybe, you know, release something and a story about it without any expectations of selling or even wanting to sell it. So, you know, maybe you keep it for yourself. I would say maybe focus, like, don't forget to focus on the art and maybe a little bit less on the sales, even if it's easy to say, but that's something that is important for me to do. So I thought maybe it would resonate with somebody else.
Yeah, I think that resonates with a lot of us. And I think that particularly in a space, you know, in the beginning of it, I started talking about discoverability and how hard it really is for artists to be seen and for, you know, pieces to be discovered, right? How do you go about finding new artists or photographers in the space that you like?
I'll be honest, like, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. A lot. And for me, that's like my main means of communication, of discovering new artists. And it's really through Twitter. And sometimes it'll be from a retweet of another artist. And it's really just something that just catches my eye, or even sometimes on Spaces. I think that it's really cool to hear artists talk about their work, like have the tone and the personality behind it. So that's why I think like putting yourself out there, maybe sometimes it can be a challenge for artists, you know, to, you know, post every day or, you know, get on Spaces, but that's how people discover your work. So I would say that, yes, like it's an extra push that you need to do for people to find you.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the hardest things that I, like, you know, continue to hear from different artists. It's the marketing aspect of it, right? It's not just the creative, part of putting it out there, but it's what happens after that of being able to see people or get people to see you. So that's a really interesting one. I think the Studio Pie Man is rugged. He just sent me a message, so muting him. And okay. 2024, in addition to exploring other blockchains, what else can we expect from you? What should we be looking out for?
That's a great question. I don't know how much I can reveal. So I have been working on two big projects. The first one I have been working on since June 2022. So it's a project I filmed in Peru, which I do want to release in 2024. So it's been in the works for 2 years and I'm really excited to release it. I can't really say much more about it. Maybe that there will be a commission aspect. Like, I love commissions. I've done two commissions so far and I think it's a really cool way to include the collector being part of the journey. So that would be the first thing. And the second thing is something that is completely unexpected. Every time I tell people in private, they're like, wait, what? What is... So I don't think I can say on Space, but let's just say it's not going to be like a traditional like image composite. It's something that is completely outside of anything that I've done. It's something that has been working a lot, my artistic direction skills, which I have had like in the past. And yeah, it's going to be unexpected and fun, and but still very much aligned with my brand and what I do. So that's all I can tell you. Those are like my two main projects which I want to focus on. And usually I try to don't release too much artwork, so that might be my two only, unless there's new opportunities that arise. But for now, it's really just going to be those two.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Kat. How can we continue to support you in your journey?
Supporting me. Honestly, just I'm going to say, like, maybe anyone else here, just like supporting on social media, like sharing. And that's always very, very much appreciated. You know, you don't need to buy my work to support me. Just a like or a comment or a GM means everything to me, and really appreciate my community. So I'm very happy with that.
Love it. All right, everybody, that's going to be it for today's show. I don't know. To me, you know, listening to different stories from artists and people in the space, and listening to like their journey and their why and what's important and what moves them and inspires them, inspires me. So I hope that everybody else was able to get that from today. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. If this is your first time, make sure that you are following me, following NFT Girl, where we post everything every single Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We host If You Know, You Know, with new creators and new faces every single week. So make sure that you tune in next week. We have Rocket Girl. I'm super excited for that one too. Have an amazing week, everybody. And I will see you guys next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kat.
Another banger, baby, calm down, calm down. Yo, this your body, he puts in my heart for lockdown, for lockdown, for lockdown. Yo, you sweet life, fan down, fan down. But then you say I love you, no day for me, yanga, oh yanga. No tell me no, 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 oh, 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 oh. Baby, gon' give me your lo, 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 oh, 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 oh. You got me like oh, 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 oh. Shawty, gon' give me your lo, 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 oh, 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 oh. I see this fine girl from my party, she wear yellow. Every other girl, they do too much, but this girl mellow. Now in my divine situation, I go use they tell I'm mellow. Finally, I find a way to talk to the girl, but she ain't no one follow. Who you gonna phone for? When you know I come for then I start to feel a bum bum. But she didn't give me small, small one. I know, say she's a bit pass it down one. But she feeling insecure, cause her friends go, they got my light ring go up. Go, they got my light ring go up.
Yeah, I know we look shallow, but for you, I get down low. And my hips make you cry when I'm moving around you. Do it once, do it twice. Hot flash park, you hold me tight. Get a taste for a night. Baby, show me you can calm down, calm down.